Hi, I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. NHPR's Exchange is a lot more than what you hear on the radio. This podcast helps you listen to The Exchange whenever, wherever it's convenient for you. So these digital services are free for you, but they cost us money. Giving is easy to do, though. You can help out at nhpr.org or just follow the link right there in the show notes. And thanks.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our Race for the First series. Each Monday, we talk with one of the many candidates running for New Hampshire's first congressional district. And let's hear from you, especially if you live in the First District. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, or use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also watch our interview today on Facebook Live. Our candidate is Republican Andy Sanborn. He's a state senator from Bedford, a businessman who owns a sports bar in Concord. And Senator Sanborn, welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura. You know, I always appreciate you giving me an opportunity.
Well, here's your opportunity to say to First District voters why they should pick you. You get in the elevator at the first floor, you come up here to the sixth floor at NHPR. So you get about 30 seconds, Senator Sanborn.
Sure, it's easy. You know, I'm different from all the other candidates. And Laura, you know that. You've seen me for the 10 years that I've been politically active. I mean, I'm very honest. I never wanted to be a politician. I never put a sign in my yard. I never donated money. I just, you know, was out there living my life, being a small business owner, being a fourth generation native. And one day I had this experience with the hand of government, shall we call it, when I opened up my restaurant on Main Street. And that 6-month process really showed me so clearly how this relationship between government and everyday people has really become fractured. So that kind of started my questioning that role of government and where we should be. And then, of course, we had that thing, as you remember, I coined it, the LLC income tax, where government came in and said they were going to make a decision how much money an individual could make. And to me, that just kind of violated all those Ronald Reagan principles that I have of my government telling me how I can live my life. And those two things kind of catapulted me to office. And you know, I've been a state senator for the past 8 years. I'm chair of tax policy for the state. And honestly, I thought I was done. I thought I'd put my time in. I did my public service. It was time to go home. But after Congressman Ginta lost his reelection, so many people reached out to me and said, look, we're looking for that honest, straightforward, authentic, straight-talking, no BS kind of guy that walks the walk to represent us. So took a little bit of time, thought about it, and made the decision to jump in because I think we need Again, we just need some balance and some everyday representation from people who actually live the challenges that everyday people live.
You sound like a little hesitation there, like you thought about it and you had to think about it. You weren't quite sure that you wanted to jump in and do this.
Yeah, look, I believe in term limits. I don't think anyone should be in politics forever, right? I think, and frankly, far too many people are. So, you know, I had always said to Lori that we were going to put some time into this and then we were going to go back and live normal everyday lives because, you know, people know, look, I'm a fourth generation native. I've lived here my entire life. I'm much more comfortable out in the woods than I am wearing a suit walking around the halls of the state house. And so I really, like I said, I really kind of thought I was at the end of my political career. And so to make that decision to kind of step back in. Now, let me be very clear. The first week that I said I was going to run for Congress, I again announced that I would sign a term limit pledge because I don't think anyone should do it forever, Laura. But again, so many people are so frustrated that the political class just no longer respects us. It doesn't listen to us. It's just not treating us that way. So I believe I've always been kind of that tip of the spear, shall we say, being willing to stand up to anyone and really fight for just everyday people.
Well, and Lori is your wife, Lori. Yes. Sanborn, who's also a state representative.
Correct.
So, yeah. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us as well. It's our Race for the First series where we spend just about 15 minutes with the candidates for the first congressional district because there are so many running this time around.
Barely noticed.
Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today, our candidate is Republican Andy Sanborn. And Senator Sanborn, I did want to discuss with you a story that your campaign has responded to recently. A grand jury investigation recently confirmed you'd made an inappropriate comment to a legislative intern in 2013, found no criminal wrongdoing in subsequent dealings with that intern. You've admitted to using crass language, to use your words, but also seemed to suggest early on, at least in the process, Senator Sandberg, that the whole thing was overblown. How do you feel about it now?
Oh, it's completely overblown. I mean,
I still feel that way.
Never seen such a level of fake news. And it's so disappointing to me, Laura, because we always see this fake news stuff in Washington and never thought it would come here. And in this case, it clearly has. I mean, look, 5 years ago, I responded to a joke with a friend of mine, and we were just joking. And now, 5 years later, people are still trying to create something out of nothing. Look, it's been looked into, and again, you saw this, that the AG, in fact, in this case, the AG actually looked into other people doing other things. And again, you know, we see the media try to recreate something. Had nothing to do with me. I was never involved. I was never investigated. I was never asked any single question, but my name was in a report. And you know, at the end of the day, look, this is still America, where people should be able to tell a joke between one another, and the world shouldn't try to melt down or create something that isn't there or wasn't there. At the end of the day, Laura, look, no one ever filed a complaint. No one ever, you know, said they were uncomfortable. I responded to a joke with a friend. That was literally it. And this kind of shows you and why people in New Hampshire and across America are so mad at the political process and so angry at the press, because people are trying to create things that just literally are phantom and don't exist. So I feel bad for society. I feel bad every time the press wants to bring it up and try and, again, make something that doesn't exist. End of the day, 5 years ago, said a joke. Actually responded to a joke with another joke. That was literally it. Everyone laughed. We all moved on. But clearly my political enemies in the press haven't yet. Someday they will.
And I did want to ask you about it because it has come up in some headlines. So what have you learned from all this, Senator Sanborn?
I've learned try not to tell jokes in public. But look, I own a sports bar. You know, when I used to see, you know, Ortiz take a fastball high up and inside, it was the same type of language because I'm just an everyday guy. You know, when I see Gronk take a bad hit, you know, playing football, you'll hear me say something because I'm just normal, like everybody are. I think we need to learn is I think the press needs to get back on message of what are the issues facing the people in America today? What are the challenges we should be doing? And stop trying to create all this thing that just doesn't exist. It's really embarrassing the process, quite frankly.
There was a process around this. There was a grand jury investigation. The Senate retained an outside law firm to review the situation. The legislature overhauled its anti-harassment policy. So there's a little bit more to it than just sort of media blowing things up.
No, I disagree with that. I mean, look, again, 5 years ago when a friend and I shared a joke, it raised the question, you know, no one was uncomfortable. No one filed anything. I need to keep saying that. But it raised the question is what is the policy? 5 years ago, the state didn't really have a policy. So they said, well, maybe we should be like every other company and go and look and see what our policy should be. Again, trying to make the leap of those types of, you know, decisions for the state to have a statewide policy as something that I did as a result of telling a joke. It's just it's so weak at a minimum. I mean, here's the perfect example. We know for a fact that in the state house, there were either 10 or 16 actual complaints that someone did something wrong, never been followed up, never gotten the type of press that me telling a joke is getting. I mean, it just shows how petty this has become.
So do you want to say what the joke was, Senator Sanborn? Just kind of
clear
the air?
No, I mean, look, I mean, come to my sports bar. You'll hear 15 or 20 people every Sunday say the same types of things.
I want to turn to another issue that has been a huge concern for voters here in New Hampshire. Gun violence, mass shootings, schools have made headlines, but also, as you know, Senator Sanborn, concerts, church, movies, other places where people gather. What do you think should be done, if anything, on the federal level to improve public safety in this realm?
Look, I think the feds ought to look and see what we did here in New Hampshire. I mean, you know, we've committed about $30 million out of this budget. I voted for it. I've supported it. I've advocated for it to make sure that, you know, our kids are safe. I mean, at the end of the day, I am constantly dismayed that if you want to take your money out of a bank, you have to go walk by an armed guard and you think nothing of it. If you want to go buy your partner a diamond ring or go to a jewelry store, so oftentimes you see a security guard in there guarding that type of product. And I was in New York City about a month ago and actually saw fully armed SWAT guards with assault rifles, you know, protecting the street performers. But yet our kids, the single most precious resource that we have, we leave completely exposed. And Laura, that just doesn't make sense to me.
So should we arm teachers? That's been
no,
a conversation.
So I think there's been a lot of what we have talked about. And again, this is something I applaud the Republican legislature for doing. We stepped up and we've committed $30 million to make our schools safer, to put cameras in, to put better door locks in, to make sure there's processes there. Now, if you're asking, I do believe personally that for anyone who is wanting, willing, trained, and able, that doesn't necessarily mean teachers. It could be the resource officer. It could be the gym teacher who used to be a Marine. It could be the custodian who used
other
to be—
other school staff.
Right? Other school staff. For people who are capable and wanting to do that, who are properly trained, there should be no reason that they shouldn't be able to be there to protect our kids.
Although when you talk about schools, you know, kids get on and off the bus, there's recess, kids are outside. Some of these mass shooters in schools have been former students, so they kind of knew where the holes were in the system. And I guess to understand, but it hasn't just been schools. I mean, more than 50 people at a concert, 20-some-odd people at a church. I mean, movies. I mean, how far can you put this armed guard thing?
So I think—
should we have armed guards at movie theaters?
No, I think actually we should pivot the conversation, Laura, and talk about— we have a mental health crisis in our country, right? It's not people, you know, people who are not having any challenges in life are not the ones picking up firearms or guns or bottles or whatever and hurting other people. We have a mental health crisis in our country. We know that in our state, we've done a tremendous amount of work, and I have, as you know, as a state senator as well, to try and help people get the help that they need. Yet at the same time, you know, because you've kind of covered this topic before, there are still existing laws in the state of New Hampshire that we are consciously not following as relates to you know, recognizing people with mental health challenges and their ability to get a firearm. So at the end of the day, I think we need to go back and really see what we're doing about making sure those who have struggled with mental health or are struggling with it, whether or not they have better, easy, more or less access. I think we need to make sure that we're finding better ways to help people who are struggling. Because people don't lash out like that because they're having a great day. They're lashing out like that because they're having a horrible day. And look, you know, like I said, you know, protecting our kids, protecting our public, protecting America, quite frankly, is the single most important obligation of your congressperson, right? Keeping our people safe. That is job number one.
Well, and in response to what you just said, you know, people do this because they have mental health issues. Although sometimes, as you know, Senator Sanborn, those issues are unrecognized until it's too late.
Correct.
As we saw in Las Vegas.
I agree.
So several states have passed so-called red flag laws, which allow courts or law enforcement to take guns away from people considered at risk of harming themselves or others. This is the before it's too late scenario, like we saw, unfortunately, in Parkland. Vermont has adopted such a law. Florida has one. Indiana, a couple other states. Some candidates for Congress this year that I've talked to are saying we should have a national red flag law. What do you think about that, Senator Sanborn?
I think we should always have any conversation we should about how to keep our people safe. As you had said, even with red flag laws, I'm not sure it would stop things like what we saw in Las Vegas, where there's absolutely no forewarning. I mean, again, I go back to this global issue. We need to do everything we can do to keep our kids and people as safe as we reasonably can. And I think there still continues to be a lot of things we can do. We need to make sure that the existing laws we have passed, that we should be following the laws we have passed. And we know we're not doing that as it relates to reporting today in America. And we need to look and see what else we can do to make sure people are safe, happy, and those who are struggling can get the help that they can. Are we going to be able to stop every single bad act in the world? Lori and I both know that we can't stop all of them, but we can try, and we should try to do the best that we can.
When you talk about reporting, are you referring to the federal background check system, the NICS, I think
yeah,
it's called?
Check, yes.
And I have heard, correct me if I'm wrong, please, that New Hampshire doesn't submit all the names
correct.
That it could to the NICS.
Correct.
So as a member of Congress, would you say, hey, New Hampshire, time to report everything?
So as a member of Congress, my job is to help New Hampshire and help the New Hampshire legislature and help the governor. I think the state of New Hampshire and the state legislature needs to have that debate that we know today they're not reporting all the names. That's a debate we should have.
I want to ask you about New Hampshire's opioid crisis, something I know you've looked at a lot as
yeah.
a state senator. And just last week, New Hampshire learned it will get a 7-fold increase in federal funds to fight the opioid crisis. Welcome news to many people here. What's your view, Senator Sanborn, of that kind of federal government involvement, given your overall philosophy for smaller government?
So, look, I mean, you know that I'm a frugal guy and I want a government so small I can barely see it. But there's a role for government, and it is to help people that are in need. Clearly, we have a need with the opioid crisis. You know, I've championed many, many things. I've actually, even as a conservative, have put bills in to spend more money in the opioid crisis. It's very important to me, both personally and in the history of my family, right? So we need to get our hands around it. We need to try and solve it. Getting the money is part of the problem. What we're spending the money on is even a bigger question we need to be asking, right? We know the opioid crisis is a three-legged stool. It's prevention, it's treatment, and it's long-term recovery. On prevention, I say every single day, we have got to find a way to turn off the faucet to stop creating so many addicts. And we do that two ways. We need to do more work on the prescription drug monitoring program, which you know I've spent a lot of time on. We need to see what we're doing with our boys and girls in blue to stop more drugs from coming in. In treatment, from the 3 to 28 days it takes to get drugs out of someone's system, we don't have enough beds in our state. We don't have the right type of access for many, many people. So we need to clearly spend more time and find better ways on treatment. You probably saw that thing last week. I was at the press conference on the Medicaid reimbursement rate. You know, going to make a real negative dent if that continues to process. So we should be spending money on that. And then long-term recovery, where you know I spent a tremendous amount of my effort. We need to make sure that if someone is struggling and they think that they might use an illegal substance, that there's some place that they can go, that someone can just hold their hand and be there for them. So you know I've always championed long-term peer-to-peer recovery. Other people champion more of a medical response to it, which I think spends more money and might not be the right process. So yes, right now we
medication-assisted treatment, MAT.
Correct. Right now, we need resources. I would support resources. I would vote for resources. But just as important as the money itself is we need a better plan than we've had to date to try and get our hands around it and stop it.
One of the biggest weapons that some people say, Republicans and Democrats, that New Hampshire does have to fight the opioid crisis, Senator Sanborn, is Medicaid expansion. And this has been a bipartisan issue. You've had some problems with Medicaid expansion. How do you feel about it now, given the assistance that it has provided to people who need substance abuse treatment?
I always remain frustrated that some people have taken Medicaid expansion, you know, this is Obamacare, and used the opioid crisis as a crutch or a weapon to try and pass it. These are two entirely separate issues. If we did not have Medicaid expansion, this expansion of Obamacare, we would still have an opioid crisis. We still need to deal it. We still need to come up with both the resources and the methodology and the treatment and process by which to help those people that are struggling. So I reject this premise that expanding Obamacare is helping on the opioid crisis or vice versa. I mean, clearly the political class has brought both of these two issues together and tried to make them both one, but they're not both one. The opioid crisis was here before Obamacare and Medicaid expansion. It will be here after Obamacare and Medicaid expansion. So we need to go back and separate them and specifically look at funding and programs of how to help our people in our state who are struggling.
Last question for Senator Sanborn, and I apologize to ask you to make it quick. You've been a big supporter of President Trump in the state. I wonder how you feel a year and a half in, where you find him lacking and where you're thinking he's doing well.
Look, I think first and foremost—
I apologize to ask you to keep it short.
No, and how many seconds do we have?
About 30.
Okay, so I mean, first and foremost, if the president is able to bring peace to the Koreas, this is going to be something that we're going to liken for the rest of our life as when Ronald Reagan knocked down the wall in the Berlins. The fact that, you know, he's been bold, he's been strong, but first president we've had that's actually been able to bring both countries together. And I think if his ability to actually follow through on that happens, it's just going to be a staggering moment for us. But then we have tax reform. People have more money in their pocket. Our economy is doing well. We're repatriating trillions of dollars from Europe. There are things happening in our country that are truly positive right now. And I think people are excited by it.
We'll have to close it out there, and I really appreciate you coming in, Senator Sanborn. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, as always.
That's Andy Sanborn, a candidate for the 1st Congressional District. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.